My name is Denise Hudson. I am 40 years old. Today is May 7th, 2018, and I'm currently speaking with Cheyenne Walters, who is my student. We're recording this interview in Pace, Florida.
My name is Cheyenne. I am age 16. Today is Monday, May 7th, and I'm speaking with Ms. Hudson, who is my teacher. We are recording this interview in Pace, Florida. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Well, it's hard for me to think past today right now. I think today is probably one of the most difficult days of my life, just knowing that one of my students isn't here anymore. And that's probably one of the most difficult things, and knowing that, you know, her brother, who's one of my students, who I absolutely love, and knowing that he's suffering, and there's nothing I can do about it, and that's hard. That's really, really hard.
Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences on your life?
One of the people who influenced me the most was my first grade teacher. Her name was Elizabeth Westinger. And she told my mom when I was in her class that I always asked a lot of questions and that I would go far in life because I wasn't afraid to ask. So any time that I ever had questions about anything or I needed help from a teacher, I would always think back to that. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I couldn't be afraid to ask questions, that was going to be what got me through. And there were times that I asked my teachers questions. I remember my trigonometry teacher in high school, I remember going and asking her, and she said, "Don't be stupid." And I got so mad at her, and I said, "I'm not stupid, but you haven't taught this where I can understand it. I need you to explain this so that I can understand it. You're going to have to try a different way." And so she did. She explained it, and I understood it, but I would have never had that boldness to ask those questions and to persist for the answers had my first grade teacher not said that to me at such a young age. And then another big influence on my life, I think it's going to have to be another teacher. My middle school band director, David Riggs, I played the flute in middle school, and he had another student that played the flute, and my flute instructor asked me to give this girl lessons. She said, I can't do it, and I don't know why she chose me, but she asked me to give this girl lessons. Her name was Bettina. I still know Bettina. And I started giving Bettina flute lessons, and Mr. Riggs came to me one day. I was in high school by this time, and he said, "You know," he said, "Bettina hasn't gotten much better." And I understood that. She had a learning disability, but she, you know, we'd work on something one week and then she'd come back the next week and it was like we never worked on it. He said, "But her confidence level is so much better. You have made such a difference in her life, if not her playing, and I think you should really consider being a teacher." And until that point, I never, ever considered being a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just didn't want to be a teacher still. And I kind of sorted away. And I wanted to be a journalist. And I started working at Pensacola News Journal on the teen board. And I got a lot of experience in the newsroom. And I didn't like it because they were not compassionate. It was all about getting a story. And I remember there was a story about a motorcyclist who had died. And they were printing a picture of the sheet covering his body on the road. And I remember looking at the person sitting beside me, and I said, "What about his family?" And they said, "It doesn't matter." And they were trying to call and reach his mother to get a comment. And I was so appalled by that.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't do this. That's not the person I am. It's not the person I want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And so I changed my mind, and I thought back to what Mr. Riggs said, and I said, you know what? Maybe I'll be a teacher. And here I am.
Tell me about a teacher or other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up.
I just hit two of them. Maybe I'll talk about somebody who's not a teacher. So I've already talked about two teachers. Let me think. An adult that had a really big impact for me was my aunt. It was my mom's aunt's sister. Yeah. Her name is Kay Johnson. She's still, in fact, I called her this morning as soon as I found out about my students, and I said, you know, I'm gonna need your prayers today because today's going to be a hard day. And she talked to me for a while, and she's texted me even since I've been here. And she's just always been encouragement for me. Like, even as an adult, there are times that I go to her house in the middle of the night. I'll call her up and say, I'm on my way, and she's up waiting on me. There have been times I've been there, you know, literally at midnight, and just because I needed somebody to talk to, you know, and mm-hmm. she's always been there for me. She's always encouraged me. You know, I know she would do absolutely anything for me. And so I think she's probably been the biggest impact on me as a non-teacher, you know. Yeah.
Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today? Are there any negative events or memories that you think shaped who you are today?
Gosh, this is such a loaded question. Now I know why it takes so long to talk. Some of the things that really shaped me, you know, I already told you about Mr. Riggs and kind of mm-hmm. instilling that in me to be a teacher. I don't think I ever would have considered it. But let me back up. Okay. So whenever I was a senior in high school, I went on the Washington, D.C. close-up trip. And it probably had the biggest impact on me. But not only because I got to experience D.C., but also because we were in groups and we talked about real-life issues. We debated. I'll never forget, I don't remember what the subject was. But I remember we were in this big room, and there was some subject that came up, and they had you divided the room, so like the facilitator would make a comment, and if you agreed with the comment, you went to one side of the room. I think it was the death penalty. If you agreed with the comment, you went to one side of the room. If you disagreed with the comment, you went to the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then each side got to kind of make their case, and then people could move, like they could change which side of the room they were on. And so I was on the side of the room with maybe two or three other people. And we kind of had some time to brainstorm and develop our case. And they elected me because I felt passionately about it. And so when I presented our case, several people from the other side came over to our side. And I just remember how empowering that was and how, you know, I wasn't condemning, I wasn't talking down to anybody, but just giving people another viewpoint and letting them kind of see it from somebody else's side, like it changed the way they thought of it. And not only did that encourage me to continue being an advocate for things that I believed in, but it also encouraged me to try to look at things from other people's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And it taught me, too, that although I may not agree with somebody, that I can still appreciate their point of view.
Yeah.
That I can still appreciate where they're coming from on an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward from that point, the next year, I was in college. I was a student at UWF in the honors program. And I was ending my freshman year, but I was actually a sophomore because of how many credits I had while I was doing dual enrollment in school. So it was my first year in college, but I was considered a sophomore, and I had the opportunity to do an internship in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
And so I found out about it, and the turnaround time was very quick. It was like we found out, and we had to turn in all the paperwork, like, I don't know, the end of that week or something. And I remember going home and talking to my mom. I was standing in the kitchen. Like, I could take you to the spot where I was, and I had this conversation with her. And I said, Mom, you know, I've got this great opportunity. I can go back to D.C. And she was like, oh, that's awesome. Are you going to be, like, you know, a mentor for the Close Up Foundation or something? I said, no, I'm doing an internship. And so she and I started talking about it. And she's like, well, let me think about it. And I was like, well, we kind of got to know within, you know, like 3 days. And I don't think she was going to let me. Like, I never, I don't think she ever would have considered it. And I never thought she would consider it.
Yeah.
But again, you know, you don't know till you ask. So I was asking, and I was presenting her with all these reasons why she should let me do this. And when she talked to my dad later, he said, of course we're going to let her do this. Of course we are. And I thought, like, okay. And so there I was, like, I spent my second semester of college, I was in Washington, D.C., and that definitely changed me.
Yeah.
It definitely changed me. It was the best experience I've ever had. And there were some hard times, man, some really hard times. But, you know, when it got down to it and it was time, my parents came to pick me up, I didn't want to leave. I did not want to leave. I loved it up there. And I really, it shaped a lot of who I became.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had so many opportunities up there. I had so many chances to make good choices and to make bad choices.
Yeah.
And no one would have known. Not a single person back home would have had a clue what I did up there. But I didn't. I made the good choices.
Mm-hmm.
And, really, you know, became my own person. I'd never been away from home. I'd always lived in Pace, always grew up here. I'd never really had any experiences outside of Pace. So it definitely gave me a lot of cultural experiences. It let me see things from a bigger worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I knew I could handle it. And I remember coming back, and it was really hard because then I came back to living at home again and having rules and, you know, and it was hard. It was an adjustment. But, you know, I can remember my mom saying things to me like, you're driving to Pensacola and it's so dangerous. Please be careful. I don't want you by yourself. And I'm like, Mom, I was in D.C. by myself. I think I can handle Pensacola.
Oh, yeah.
But that definitely changed me. But then when I did graduate from college with my degree in English education, I didn't become a teacher right away. I was tired of going to school. I did my student teaching at Pace at the school where I attended. And because I graduated early from college, the students who were freshmen when I was a senior were seniors when I was a student teacher.
Oh, wow.
So it was really awkward. Really, really awkward. I felt very uncomfortable. I was so tired because I had been going to school summers, you know, going full-time college, doing all this stuff, and I was so tired of having homework and studying outside of, you know, time, and I was still having homework as a teacher. I still had to do lesson plans and grade, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, I didn't want to have homework anymore. And I did not feel that I had done a great job with my student teaching, even though Miss Sturgeon, who was my supervising teacher, she's still here, she told me I did a wonderful job, and she thought I'd make a wonderful teacher. My professor from UWF, who observed me, was giving me glowing reviews. No one said a thing bad about me, but I was really hard on myself. And I can remember during that time, student teaching, driving to school and just crying, thinking, I don't feel like I can do this another day. I was so miserable. And I said, I just need to know I'm making a difference. Just one student. If there's one student that I am touching right now, I need to know who it is. And in that day, a girl came in and she handed me a handwritten note. And she said, don't read this yet. And I said, okay. So a little while later, I sat down to read it. And in the letter, she talked about how she was having such a hard time at home, and her parents were going through a divorce, and it was just such a time of turmoil for her. But school was her safe place, and that when she came to school, she was so excited to come into my class because she knew I cared about her. And I sat at the desk and just boo-hooed. And I said, okay, I can do this. I can do this. But I didn't become a teacher right away. I started working for the state of Florida. I worked for the Guardian Ad Litem program, where I advocated for abused and neglected children in the court system. Mm-hmm. And I got to see a lot of heartbreak. But I also got to see that sometimes people just make really stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
And they're still people. And the things that we read in the newspaper or see on police reports, it's not always black and white. And people aren't black and white. And I would talk to people that had, you know, that I was going to recommend that they never, ever got custody of their kids back. And I would go out and I would talk to them, and I'd have to tell this to them to their face and say, look, I'm recommending that your children be adopted because you did X, Y, and Z, and, you know, and I'd have to say that to them. And, you know, and I never had one person get mad at me. I had good enough relationships by the time that I got to that point with them that they respected me and they understood where I was coming from, even though they disagreed with me.
Yeah.
And they knew that I respected them, even though I did not agree with the things, the choices they had made, and the things, you know, they had done. And but there was, when after my daughter was born, it became very, very difficult for me to do that. And I would come home and I would grab her and hold her and cry, because I would see kids that were being abused. I would hear the judge send kids back to homes where I knew they were going to be abused again, and I knew they were coming back. And it got really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I decided then, well, I've got this teaching degree, so why not? So I really became a teacher to get away from that.
Yeah.
Really, mm-hmm. I did. But my first year teaching, well, pretty much every year teaching since then, this is my 15th year teaching, and pretty much every year since then, that experience of working at Guardian Ad Litem, I have appreciated it, because it taught me how to build rapport with students. It taught me how to listen to them. And every year I've had to deal with something and, you know, explain to some kid that I understand what they were going through, even though I didn't go through it.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had to make abuse reports that, you know, tore my heart out. But that time prepared me for this time.
Yeah.
And now I would not do anything else. Mm-hmm. I love being a teacher. I love, you know, where I am. I love my students more than anything. And so, yeah, that's pretty much.
What was the worst thing you did as a kid?
I was a good kid. Like, I did nothing wrong. The worst thing I did as a kid. I don't even know how to answer this. Oh, my gosh.
Like, okay, what was the thing that you thought was the worst thing you did? Like, you know now that you were a good kid, but, like, back then, what did you think was the worst possible thing you could do? You could do or did?
I can remember, like, oh, this is going to sound so stupid.
It's okay.
But, like, I remember one time, my mom never really had a curfew for me. She just always wanted to know where I was.
Yeah.
And this one night, she had said, like, okay, I need you to be home by such and such. And I knew I was running late. And so before I left where I was, and you're going to laugh at me when you find out where I was at church. Before I left church, I changed the time on my watch.
Oh, my God.
And when I got home, my mom was like, you're late. And I was like, what do you mean I'm late? And she's like, you're late. I'm like, Mom, look. And she's like, you just sat in the driveway and changed the time on your watch. I was like, I most certainly did not. And I was telling the truth because I changed the watch at the church. But that was like one of those times that, you know, that's stupid. And then I kind of, I was talking, one of my friends, she and her boyfriend were going through a rough time, and I had called him, but it was like when we had three-way, so she was listening in on the conversation, but he didn't know it. And so he and I were talking, and he was telling me some stuff, and then he had to go for some reason, and he was going to be calling me back, and I told my friend, I was like, look, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'll talk to him again, but I can't not tell him you're on the phone. So just let me talk to him. And then when, and I didn't plan any of this, but when he called me back, we were talking again. And then he said, well, he said, what about me and you? And I said, what do you mean? What about me and you?
No.
And I said, and he was like, you know, I'm going to break up with her and I want us to be together. And I said, okay. And I really liked him. And I didn't tell her about it, of course, and he didn't break up with her right away. And I got really mad at him, and so his brother asked me out.
Oh, my God.
And so I started dating his brother because I was mad at him. And from that point on, we became pretty much enemies. And to this day, like, we will, yeah, we, yeah, but I can remember, the guy I was dating, his brother, right out here in front of the school, got into an accident. He got hit by a car.
Oh, my.
And I ran out there. He wouldn't give them his name. Like, they called his mom's house and told them that her son had been in an accident, but they gave her the wrong name, so she didn't know if it was really one of her sons or if it was somebody else, and they called their own person. It was horrible. But anyway, so I got out there, and when we got to the hospital, sitting in the waiting room, like, some of the family had to literally separate us because we were just, like cats fighting just the whole time. We were just, and it was all because, like, we knew that this other thing had happened, but nobody else knew about it. And so that was pretty bad. That was pretty low. Yeah, that's pretty low.
It's okay, though.
Like, yeah. Like,
there's a lot of different people at the school that just does so much worse.
But
so.
I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. I didn't party. I didn't sneak out of the house. Like, I didn't do any of that stuff.
I'm going to be honest. I snuck out of the house. I'm going to be honest.
I never snuck out of the house. I was terrified. Like,
I've only done it twice.
Like, if my parents didn't find out about it, I would have told on myself. Like, I'm not kidding with you. I have such a guilty conscience. And, yeah, so I couldn't have done it. I never told on myself about setting my watch back, though.
That's one thing you couldn't do.
No. I adamantly denied sitting in the driveway and doing it, because I didn't sit in the driveway and do it. Did it at the church, but, you know, whatever.